Bonjour, good morning everyone. Today is Friday the 26th of September. It's International Day for the Total Elimination of Nuclear Weapons. And in connection with that day, today there is a high-level meeting to commemorate and promote the total elimination of nuclear weapons in New York, part of the GA Week, 10 a.m. New York time. It will begin with an opening statement by Annalena Baerbock, the President of the General Assembly. There'll be a statement by Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, and we'll have that for you later. Also today, in addition, of course, to day four of the general debate at the Assembly, the Security Council resumes its high-level open debate on artificial intelligence, which began yesterday. Speaking of yesterday, the Secretary General was speaking at a meeting of G20 foreign ministers, among other things. He noted that when violence erupts, capital flees, services collapse, and poverty deepens. And when development falters, social contracts fray, institutions weaken, and instability follows. And climate change intensifies the pressure at every turn. So on the subject of development, we're very happy today to have with us the chief statistician of FAO, the Food and Agriculture of the Organization of the United Nations. They yesterday released a report that assesses progress on 22 indicators on food and agriculture that span six sustainable development goals. And I'm going to let you decide together with our guests today whether the glass is half full or half empty on the development agenda for the food and agriculture indicators. So José Rosero Moncayo, I give the floor to you, and if you'd like to introduce your colleague as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone. I am here with my colleague, Dorian Navarro, from the Statistics Division of FAO. So we are 5 years away for the end of the 2030 Sustainable Development Agenda, and the clock is ticking on meeting the SDGs. According to its mandate, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations has released the latest edition of its biennial report entitled Tracking Progress on Food and Agriculture-Related SDG Indicators, which offers a critical look at how much we have progressed so far on the food and agriculture-related SDG targets. This report sheds light on which areas have achieved the most progress and which have seen a deterioration and can, therefore, serve as a guide for galvanizing efforts on those objectives and in those regions lagging further behind. The findings presented in the report are quite troubling. According to the report, only about one-third of the 22 indicators under FAO custodianship have registered some improvement. And the world is close to achieving only one quarter of the relevant targets, while another quarter remains far or very far from completion. Now, going deeper, let me present some highlights of this report. In terms of global food security, this remains far above the 2015 level, about 20, which is nearly 2.3 billion people, were moderately or severely food insecure in 2024, compared to 21.4% in 2015. Meanwhile, an estimated 8.2% of the global population may have faced hunger. Now, between 2019 and 2023, only 65% of women of childbearing age achieved minimum dietary diversity, with the figure having deteriorated since 2015. The report also shows that the small-scale food producers earn less than half of what their non-small-scale counterparts make, while women face significant disparities in land ownership. The report also shows that the number of animal genetic resources secured in conservation facilities has increased compared to previous years, yet still only represent a fraction of the local and transboundary livestock breeds. Going to the objectives related to water, the report finds that water stress is a major problem in certain regions, with Western Asia and Northern Africa grappling with severe water scarcity. On SDG 14, there is a growing trend towards the adoption of international instruments combating illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Nonetheless, the proportion of global fish stocks with biologically sustainable levels has continued to decrease, dropping to 62.5% in 2021, down from 90% in 1974. On SDG 15, while the world forest area continues to diminish, falling from 31.9% in 2000 to 31.2% in 2020, the rate of decline has slowed compared to previous decades. Now, given these results, we need to redouble our efforts to achieve food security, improve nutrition, and sustainable agriculture, while ensuring the sustainability of our natural resource base. While the report benefits from the highest availability of data on the food and agriculture-related SDG indicators to date, there are also persistent data gaps that continue to hamper global monitoring. With only 5 years left in the 2030 agenda horizon, this is a key challenge, and indeed, there have been repeated calls for increasing investment in data, which includes the UN Secretary General Pact for the Future Digital Compact, and the most recently Sevilla commitment on financing and development. I encourage all of you to read the new FAO SDG progress report, and let me close by emphasizing that FAO is committed to making all the efforts to rescue the SDGs and deliver on our collective promise for people on the planet. Thank you for your attention. My team and I are here during the morning, and we will be happy to answer any questions about it.
Yes, thank you very much. So in addition to Jose, we have here Dorian Navarro, who's a statistician at FAO. I see that we have a hand up from John Zarkostas. John, the floor is yours.
Good morning. It's John Zarkostas for The Lancet and France 24 English Channel. I was wondering, so if you could give us some more insights on how you're estimating these figures. And I'm interested in particular on the figure of 82% of the population of the world might be facing hunger. Is it based on data from FAO staff on the ground in correlation with national ministries in these countries? Or is it extrapolations from models? Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for that question. Indeed, so FAO collects data from different type of sources, but we give a lot of preeminence to the data coming from country members. In the case of food insecurity and hunger, what we do is we have different type of indicators in order to measure food insecurity. Let me start from that. And in the context of the SDGs, there are two specific SDG indicators to measure hunger and food insecurity. The first one is the indicator that is called the prevalence of undernourishment, which measure basically the percentage of people that habitually do not have sufficient energy calorie consumption, according to the requirements that they need, okay? And the figure that I show of 8.2% of global population that may face hunger refers to that specific indicator. Now, in order to put it together, we combine different type of information coming from country members. The one type of information is the one that is called food balance sheets, that basically what it does is that estimates the availability of caloric energy that exists in a specific country in a given year. In order to do that, you need information of how much food is produced in the country. You need information of trade, okay? Because of course, in order to measure availability of food, you need to estimate how much food is available in the country, and for that you have to deduct imports, for example. So trade is very important. You need information of stocks that are available, and you need information on how much is basically put for seeds or to feed animals. So again, a lot of information is very data intensive, but this is information that countries provide to FAO. Apart from that, we have to have an idea as well on how much food is accessed by people, because one thing is to have food available, another thing is that people have access to that food. And for that, we compute parameters coming from household surveys that allow us to estimate which is the degree of inequality in the access to food. These household surveys are also coming from official data. And here I have only talked about one of the two SDG indicators. The second SDG indicator that we have computes the total population in food insecurity in different levels of severity. While the first indicator that I explained, that it was about hunger, was tackling or is basically aiming to measure the most severe condition of food insecurity, okay? The second indicator measures food insecurity in levels that are beyond hunger, okay? But still very much problematic because it conditions the access of food to the population. Here I'm referring to the indicators that are measured by the Food Insecurity Experience Scale. That is an experience-based instrument that, again, is collected in every single one of the countries. And FAO works together with the countries to introduce this type of question, this type of models, inside of their own household surveys. I hope that I answered the question with that.
Thank you very much. I just sometimes it's useful, particularly for people who are working with audio, to go over some of the basics. I know that your work drills down deep on the statistics and the analysis. But I think we have a request if you could briefly just explain that distinction between food security and hunger.
Okay, the best way of explaining that is to imagine food insecurity in some sort of a scale, right? In which you can imagine that you have different levels of severity of food insecurity. Let's start with the most severe case. Okay, when people do not have access to sufficient food in order to be able to even have the minimum requirements that they need to have a healthy life, that is what we call hunger. Okay, so it's the most severe condition, and that is where it is measured by the SDG indicator of the prevalence of the nourishment. But then food insecurity doesn't stop in hunger. There are other levels of severity that are very much important in terms of policy making, that basically explains a situation in which even if the population is not suffering from hunger, they still find problems to access to food. There are several conditions on that. For example, people that right now they have uncertainty in procuring food for their houses, and because of that, they have reduced the amount of meals that they have in a single day, or put it differently, even if they are eating the same amount of times, they have reduced the quantity and even the quality of the food that they have in every single one of these times that they eat. So those are also conditions of food insecurity, and that is what we call moderate food insecurity. So the second SDG indicator measures those two conditions, the one of severe and the one of moderate.
Thank you very much. I'm looking to see if there are any more questions either online or in the room. Perhaps not, or not at this stage. You're welcome to stay where you are if you like, in case there are questions that come up later on. We also have a number of our colleagues who are online in case there are questions for them. It's otherwise a fairly thin program. I'm going to just move to announcements. But I see that both John and Nina have questions. We'll go to Nina, who's in the room. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, it's a question for you, Michele. It's about next week. There's the Building Bridges conference here, and there is John Kerry is here. We were supposed to have some information about the UN involvement, and also whether or not we might expect a press conference. We were supposed to have a bit more information about what to expect next week.
Thank you, Nina. I don't have anything on this at the moment. So if I do, I'll look into it and see whether there's anything that we can tell you about that. But nothing further on that on the moment. I've got John and then Olivia. John, go ahead.
I've got a follow-up question since you're the in-house technical expert. If you could guide us the input that the FAO makes in the IPC classifications, and in particular IPC5, catastrophic hunger or famine. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you for the question. So the indicators that are around the SDGs in terms of food security measure a phenomenon of food insecurity that is called chronic food insecurity, okay? That is a structural condition that speaks about a persistent state of food insecurity, okay? The type of food insecurity that is measured by tools or methods such as the IPC measure yet another type of food insecurity that is called or described acute food insecurity that is related basically with emergencies and is related with a situation that is so severe that threatens the lives and the livelihood of the population. So we are talking about two different concepts, and we are talking about two different methods and ways to approximate those concepts. In the case of acute food insecurity, that is basically your question, there are specific reports, okay, that cover those topics. IPC is constantly publishing, okay, briefs or country reports that describe different type of conditions, emergency conditions happening in different countries, and there is a more global report that is called the Global Report on Food Crisis that describes the condition of acute food insecurity in the most severe food crisis that exists nowadays. The Global Report on Food Crisis was published in April this year, and as far as I understand, there is a midterm review of that report that was published a couple of weeks ago. So I would like to refer you to those reports on that. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Olivia, Reuters.
Hello, morning all. My question is actually for Tarek from World Health Organization, please.
Tarek, I believe, is online. Maybe you can just go ahead and ask your question, and then we'll connect with him.
Thank you. Morning, Tarek. My question, please, is just for the WHO's latest perspective on the health situation in Gaza City and northern Gaza, an overview of what you're seeing there in terms of pressure on hospitals. There's been a number of strikes as well this week. And also just perhaps a brief explanation of what kind of pressures also you're therefore seeing in the south as thousands of people flee southwards from the north. Thank you.
Hi, thank you very much Olivia, for these questions. I think my colleague Fadala sent you a number of latest data on hospitals and attacks, but I'm happy really to summarize that that basically what is happening is that you have displacement orders. It's affected hundreds of health facilities, and even if hospitals are not asked to evacuate, there is a lack of access, there is a violence just nearby, and that can put them out of service. So since September 1st, four hospitals in North Gaza and Gaza Governorate were forced to shut down. And this brings the total of functioning hospitals in Gaza to only 14. And, you know, we've been keeping this this tally regularly. Now, these 14 hospitals are including 8 in Gaza City, 3 in Deir al-Balah, and 3 in Khan Yunus. Unfortunately, none of them is functioning at full capacity. The four hospitals that were put out of service are Al-Rantisi Children Hospital, Ophthalmic Hospital, and St. John Eye Hospital in Gaza City, as well as Hamad Hospital for Rehabilitation and Prosthetics in North Gaza. Now, Hamad Hospital is one of the main three specialized rehabilitation facilities in the Gaza Strip, and it was serving 250 outpatients for rehabilitation services. I think we will have a new update on the rehabilitation needs. So stay tuned as that. Now, just a little bit on attacks. So the majority of latest attacks since the incursion to Gaza City between 7 and 17 September. So there were 12 attacks that have been reported, including 11 in Gaza City and 1 in Khan Yunus. And I'm really happy to send all these details in a briefing notes. But what we are keeping saying is that more violence only means more injured people. It means more casualties, more deaths, and it means less of access. People in Gaza are suffering from multiple displacements. There are shortages of medical supplies. There are issues of access both for humanitarians, for health workers, also for patients. There are a number of people, thousands of people, over 15,000 people who need to be evacuated for medical reasons. And evacuations are really going very, very slowly. So again, we can only appeal for a ceasefire, appeal for unhindered access, so we can try to support what's left of the health system in Gaza with the medical supplies, with emergency medical teams, I mean, with everything else. So this really has to stop, and we are unfortunately coming to grim a second anniversary of what's happening in Gaza, and I hope we will hear from the ground sometimes next week from Dr. Pieperkorn. But I'm happy to send all these latest data numbers in a briefing notes. Back to you, Michele.
Thank you, Tarek. We have a question online from Gabriela Sotomayor. Go ahead, please. Could you just please specify who your question is for, since we've got several speakers available?
Thank you, Michele. My question is for Mr. Rosero. If he can give us an assessment of the situation in Mexico, please.
Okay, thank you, Gabriela, for your question. Inside of the report that we have published on SDGs, you will be able to see not only information at the global level, but you're also going to be able to do it at the regional, sub-regional level, and you can even do it at the country level. So in that sense, you will be able to see the information that is specific from Mexico there. I apologize that I cannot go into the specificity of Mexico because I don't have it in my head, but I invite you to see the report. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know, Gabriela, whether you have a follow-up or whether that's the hand from before that's still up.
Thank you, Michele. Well, okay, thank you for your answer, but it will be nice to have your voice and image, you know, saying about Mexico, but maybe later we can make an interview, do an interview or something, one-on-one.
Thank you. Maybe I just suggest you take this up bilaterally. John Zarkostas.
Yes, it's a follow-up to Nina's question to Tariq. Tariq, you mentioned that one of the facilities that was destroyed, I think, was the prosthetics hospital. Are there any facilities now in Gaza dealing with prosthetics? And secondly, are any of the international field hospitals perhaps doing some of this work or not? If you've got any information on that, it would be great. Or perhaps UNICEF, who are listening in, can chip in on this one. Thanks.
Hi, John. Yeah, I know that you were interested in this topic for some time, and I'm really happy to ask my colleagues in the OPT office for more detailed information. And I said, I think we will have a update on rehabilitation needs. But let me come back to you on the really details. Who is providing these services? What is available, and what are the needs? Thank you.
Thank you, Tariq. Anybody else? I'm looking online in the room. No questions so far for any of our briefers, either on the podium or online. So we'll keep this short and sweet today, it looks like. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about the meetings update, as I normally do. The Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights concludes this afternoon its 78th session at 5:30 p.m. It will issue its concluding observation on six countries whose reports have been reviewed during this session. Those are the Russian Federation, Colombia, Chile, the Netherlands, Zimbabwe, and the Laos People's Democratic Republic. The Committee on Enforced Disappearances, its 29th session, which began on the 22nd of September and is finishing on the 2nd of October at Palais Wilson, is today reviewing the report of Sri Lanka. So I think that we'll conclude it for today. I think it's been a busy week. This week, and probably we're seeing the signs of a little bit of tiredness. But I wish you all a wonderful afternoon and a great weekend ahead. Thank you very much.